Alarm Medi, I'm an addict.
Hey.
Oh, this is actually frightening. I've done this last 5 years ago or something like that. Yeah, it was about 5 years ago I did this last, and I was kind of hoping to hold out for the 40 because I'm so important. I thought that I've got to get the 40 soon. And when I come tonight, I was late because bus broke down and stuff, but I managed to get here because it's a home group. I do service here. And my sponsor asked somebody else and then asked me, and I kind of wanted to say no, but it's my sponsor. Do you know what I mean? My sponsor's sort of saying, can you do the 15 minute? And I was like, the 15 minute? Do you not know who I am? Surely I should be doing the 40. You know what I mean? I've been around a little while. I come here regularly. And I thought I'd be okay with it. I didn't think I'd be fearful at all. I hear people say I'm nervous, blah, blah. And I think, oh, it's not all that. And when Victoria was getting through the steps, when she got to about step 10, suddenly I got this weird, wave of anxiety. And I weren't sure if I was going to be sick or just run out. It was one or the other, but I didn't do either, thankfully. I'm Eddie, I'm an addict, and this stuff works, I suppose. That's the main thing that I can say, that through thick and thin, through everything that's gone on in my recovery, most of it my own, my sponsor, you know, I give him a shout out for keeping me here and keep me sane, tells me I should have my own fellowship, which is Sabotage Anonymous, because I have this ability to sabotage myself, and despite me sabotaging things, I'm still here, and I still work this program to the best of my ability. Just to give you a bit of background, as 15 minutes isn't that long, it should be 40, but we'll get that. We'll get that next year. I grew up in a family that I guess it seemed all right to me, but the family was unmanageable. Like the whole family was unmanageable, and there was powerlessness around addiction in the family, and there was some abuse, there was violence. There was kind of don't tell the truth. That was one of the main things, is you don't tell anyone, like, what goes on in here. You keep that behind closed doors. You know, you go outside and you put a front on and you make sure everything's okay to the, pardon me, to the outside world, or they believe it's okay. And that was normal to me. And where I grew up, that was normal to most people. It seemed like everyone was the same. I grew up on an estate in West London, in South Acton, which they've now call Acton Village or something like that. They've like pulled it down and put ones up exactly in the same place as the old blocks and just give it a posh name, basically. And it was a sort of, when I was growing up in the 70s, so that gives you a rough idea how old I am, it was a sort of place where they filmed Zed Cars and Softly Softly and all that sort of stuff, because it was that sort of environment. It looked like, kind of like, I suppose, what the Americans would call a ghetto. You know what I mean? It kind of looked like a shithole. And it was a shithole, really. But it was our shithole, and it's where we lived. And I left there when I was 10. There was domestic violence. My dad was violent. And we actually come home from school one day, kind of make light of it, but it was quite traumatic. And we just moved, basically. It was kind of like, you've got to move. You can't tell your dad where you live, because he was getting worse and worse, and started afresh. And I went to this other school in this nicer sort of area, and suddenly I've got to wear a uniform, and I was going to church and all this sort of stuff, and I just thought, I don't like this. I don't like this at all. I was getting bullied. I'm part of, you wouldn't believe it, but I'm part of an ethnic minority group. I'm ginger. I grew up with curly ginger hair and freckles, and that weren't the look to have. That really wasn't the look to have. It was just like getting abuse all the time, picked on, bullied. And the first thing, you know, I believe it's a disease of addiction. The first thing I probably picked up or probably acted out on was fantasy, which was followed by solvents and thinners and that sort of stuff. I have an elder brother who by chance happened to work in a paint factory, and he used to bring thinners home and to sell to people and put them in the shed, but nobody cottoned on to the fact that I was spending a lot of time in the shed. I just used to lock myself in the shed and just go and hide, and soon followed drink. And I suppose I functioned for years, really, because my dad was an alcoholic addict, and there was kind of addiction within my family. It was almost as if, as long as you went to work and you paid your bills and you kind of functioned, you were all right. and I managed to build up stuff. I think we do have an ability to achieve well, to work hard and achieve well. So I kind of, you know, did all right at work, didn't really get any qualifications at school, but did all right at work, you know, got a flat, got a house, got a car. But I was always under the surface. I didn't know it at the time, but it was always unmanageable because it was getting like a remortgage, getting a loan, getting this. It was never, you know, kind of all right. And, you know, kind of, I've got a daughter who's 21. She's from a previous relationship. I ended up married. And, you know, only addicts, I think, can identify with this. I got married by accident. It was like I was seeing this person. I was in a show with her. We used to do amateur dramatics, and her husband was in the show. Her three kids, me and my daughter, and I started having an affair with her because that's what you do. You know, it's not to glamorise it. It was not the best idea in the world, but it just kind of. She left her husband. I ended up buying his share of the house, and it's kind of. I just went along with it, and kind of. You know, things were going from bad to worse, and where most people would kind of think the sensible thing to do is to pull the plug and call it a day, I said, oh, let's get engaged. And then, like, it was still going downhill, and we moved to West Sussex, and I said, let's get married. You know, it seems like the most sensible thing in the world to me, even though I was completely barking mad. So we ended up married, and 6 months later, I was in a treatment centre, and we were heading for divorce. You know what I mean? So it's like, so my plans don't really work very well. Excuse me. Don't stop me still wanting to have them and still wanting to work them. So I ended up in this treatment centre in Hove on the coast. And she was living up the road. And I still, in my insanity, even though I was kind of some sort of way abstinent, thought that I could save this marriage that was clearly dead in the water and should never have happened. So I used to kind of go and visit her and see the kids, and I stayed in Hove for 3 months in a B&B and just did meetings. And it was a good foundation, but the problem I had after that was I came back to London. I ended up looking after a relative who was sick, who was an addict, who was drinking, and had diabetes and was eating cakes and whatever. So it was quite mad, you know what I mean? I should have just stood on my own two feet, but I just didn't want to, I suppose, really. I didn't want to grow up. And I still had this inkling that this marriage might work. So after 4 years, he passed away, or 5 years, and I inherited quite a lot of money. And an addict without a programme and with money, from my experience, as you know, don't have to do what I do, is not a good idea. So I went through £250,000 in 2.5 years. And ended up 7.5 stone, completely confused, demoralised, wanted to die but didn't have the guts to kill myself, just confused and bewildered, and I didn't know what to do. But I knew about meetings, so I started going to meetings, and I'd say for about a year of my 2.5 years out, about a year or a year and a half of that, I was going to meetings, but just for a pit break, you know, that's the reality. I was coming in for a little bit of a break, seeing if I could get a few quid off of somebody or get a little bit of work or whatever it might be. So I was doing that, and eventually I kind of surrendered, I suppose, really. You know, there's been a few surrenders, but I surrendered and started going to meetings. And I was going to these, what people might call Taliban meetings, you know, it's not a nice term, but I was going to these kind of Taliban meetings where it was like, you've got to follow this suggestion, do this, do this, do this, do this. But at the time, I know that for me, I needed that. I needed that straight down the line, that discipline, that structure, that kind of, you know, you have to do this. So I did that for a while and started doing a bit of work, doing dog walking, getting a bit of self-esteem, going to meetings, getting a bit of money, making some friendships and relationships. And after, I think it was about 2.5 years doing this, I was going to a hybrid kind of various fellowships. You know, NA is my home now, but I was going to three different fellowships at the time. And I come to a point where I was clean, but I didn't know if I wanted to kill somebody else or kill me, or both, really. I just didn't know what to do with myself. And at the London Convention, the person who's now my sponsor spoke, and I kind of thought, you know, he's got it going on. I want what he's got. You know, I kind of really do want to do that. And I'd heard all this stuff, and it's just my experience about the Green and Gold Step Working Guide. It was like, oh, that's, stay away from that. That's going to take you years and years. It takes forever. You know, you want to go through the steps in like, you know, 3 months and be making amends and whatever. You don't want to be doing this Green and Gold stuff. But I decided I'd undertake that and started working the steps, you know, the Step Working Guide. And it, thanks. And I've found it to be the, one of the best and most loving things personally that I've ever done for myself. And I'm very impatient. So what my higher power did for me is my sponsor travels a lot. So I'd do some step work and then he'd be away and I'd be chomping at the bit to get this stuff done. And he'd say, well, I'm away for however long. You've got to wait. And I'd be like, but I don't want to wait. You know, I don't want to, I want to get on with this. And he's going, well, like, you've got to sit with it. You know, you've got to sit with it and kind of feel it more than anything else and get an understanding of it. So I went through the steps and now we're going through the traditions, which is taking a bit of time, but that's due to both of us because, you know, I've got about 4 minutes, I think, left, something like that. So just to bring you, I suppose, up to speed, the stuff that's happened to me the last couple of years, I was, I got a career in recovery, but then I was made redundant a year ago. At the end of last May, I was made redundant and I went through a debt relief order, which is like a bankruptcy. It's the next form down from bankruptcy. And then I was made homeless. So I spent 6 months homeless, clean, in recovery. And, you know, it works. Do you know what I mean? That's all I can say is this stuff really works. You know, I kind of, I didn't know what to do with myself. I have made mistakes. I'm by no means a perfect recovering addict. I'd love to jump up and wave my arms in the air and say how fantastic I am and, you know, you should have me doing some sort of circuit speaking somewhere, but that's not the reality. The reality is that I've made mistakes. I've had 4 years clean. I ended up in hospital with a food issue that had been underlying the whole of my life. I'd celebrated 4 years clean on the Monday, and the Tuesday I was in hospital, and I was in there till the Friday. And then with the homelessness and stuff, I've again tried to sabotage myself with inappropriate, I won't go into details because it's not really the right forum, but inappropriate sexual behaviour, paying for sex, doing stuff that I shouldn't have been doing that I know was not good for me, and, you know, but I've not had to use. You know, I'd be lying if I said I didn't want to. I mean, when I got made homeless, I sat outside a pub for about half an hour just looking across it, and I've not had a drink for quite a long time, and I just sat there thinking, you know, I could just go in there. I could just go in there now. And about 2 days after that, I was looking for, you know, paraphernalia to make kind of a crack pipe and whatever. But I didn't have to do it, you know, kind of, you know, the thought was there, but it didn't have to be immediately followed by an action. Before, if I thought something, that was it. You know, I'd think it and it was kind of acted on before there was even a buffer. There was no kind of delay sort of thing. But now, somehow, through all of this, there's like this buffer. I've got people that I speak to regularly. I'm in regular contact with my sponsor. I work the steps to the best of my ability. I do daily inventory. I pray and I try and meditate. I'm not the best at meditating. I tend to doze off, to be quite honest. But you know, all I could say to anyone that... We've got about 2 minutes, minute and a half. All I could say to anyone that if you're new or you're struggling is, you know, get on board. You know, go to meetings. It, you know, kind of, I am an NA member. NA is my home. But go to whatever meetings you need to go to. Just go to meetings. Go to meetings. Stop using and find a new way of life, you know, because this is a new way of life. I've got my daughter back in my life. We've got a fantastic relationship. Her mum sadly doesn't speak to me. I'm still disowned by my family. But, you know, slowly things come back. Sometimes I do get, I don't know if it's jealous or envious, but when I hear people where they've got all this stuff back in their life, or they're travelling, or they're doing this, I do get jealous or envious, whatever it might be, I'll be honest. But I know that, you know, that my life is far better now than it ever has been. And it will only stay good and get better if I stay clean and continue working the programme of Narcotics Anonymous. I do service at group level, I've done service at region, which is a challenge, but it's worth doing, you know. Yeah, we've got someone who was there with me. But it's a challenge, but it's worth doing, and there's so much growth in it. You learn so much through doing service. And I think I'll just leave it at that. Thanks.